Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the half-hour panel on media and politics on 2SER and the Community Radio Network. I'm Lucy Robson, and on our panel today, Kathy Novak, presenter and reporter for SBS's World News Australia, Melanie Withnall, who is Managing Director of 2SER and the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia board member, and on the phone, Gold Walkley Award-winning journalist Joanne McCarthy from the Newcastle Herald. Thank you all for joining us today. We'll be talking about women making the news in just a moment, but first let's talk about female voices in the media in 2014. Are they still underrepresented and why? Kathy, I'll start with you. Working in TV, what's your impression of gender equality in that industry?
Well, from where I sit, I think it is pretty balanced in the SBS newsroom. The people around me are sort of a mix of men and women, and I don't know if it could be a bit deceiving, but if you look actually on television, there is, at SBS at least, and across a number of the channels, a pretty fair split. So for our main evening news bulletin at 6:30, it's for the most part Janice Peterson and Anton Enos, a woman and a man. And then myself and Ricardo Gonsalves will switch off the late news, and Lee Lin Chin generally does the weekend. So I think it's a pretty balanced mix. And within our reporting pool too, you see a few female faces there.
We do have a lot of female anchors now on our screens. It hasn't always been that way. But one thing that hasn't seemed to change over time is that people do talk about women's appearance a lot more than men's. And is that something that you encounter working in TV?
Absolutely. I have a Facebook page that's an SBS Facebook page, and generally we'll have that updated with events of the day. We use it to promote what's coming up on the news. Generally, these days we do a video promo, so it's kind of light. I'll get there and for 30 seconds say, hey everyone, this is what's coming up. Maybe there's a bit of a quirky story, or maybe it's a serious story. Maybe I'm talking about this is what's happening in Ukraine, and it's real news. And the comments largely are, I like your jacket, or doesn't your hair look nice today?
Do you think it's more pronounced in TV than other parts of the media?
I would say so, because you're looking at people, and that people do notice other people's appearance. And, you know, I think it just kind of comes with the territory. I'd love it if we had more robust debate on the topics that we're broadcasting rather than my jacket, as I mentioned. But having said that, I definitely will comment on other people's appearance and say, oh, I do like what Sandra Sally's wearing tonight or something like that. So I guess I can't really complain.
Fair enough. There are still fewer women than men in the top ranks of the media sector. This has been reported pretty widely already. Melanie, you're in management now. You're running a radio station and you've worked with lots of women who have made it to the top. So what do you think they need to do to actually make it there?
I think those role models are really important. I was very lucky when I started my commercial radio career, so coming from community radio before that, moving to a commercial radio station that had a female program director. So when I was at 2UE, Sandy Aloisi was my boss, and she really provided a very positive role model to me. And then later, you know, working at the ABC, lots of women in management there. So, and then community radio really has a very healthy representation of women in station management and also on boards for things within our sector. So I've been lucky, but I think those role models are really important. And I know Elizabeth Broderick and the Australian Institute of Company Directors have been working very hard to try and to get more women on those positions of power and to get them on company boards generally. And, you know, having a female prime minister is also very important, that people see that women can achieve those roles, and I think also creates role models for people coming through, you know, like myself, who can see these women and think, well, they're doing it, I can too, and be able to progress through those ranks. Because, you know, to move into management, you do have to put your hand up and say, that's a job I want, and I think I can do that job because I've seen other women do it before me. So I think that's key in getting more women into those senior positions. In saying that, it is healthy in some sectors. Commercial media, not so much. You know, I think there's a lot of work to be done there, but I do think it is starting to change and it is starting to get a bit better. I think SBS's board, lots of, you know, women on that as well. So, you know, it definitely is changing.
We're a community radio show, but we don't often have people from the community sector on our show. So do you think there's anything unique about this part of the media that has a, you know, does it have a better gender balance than other parts?
I think I was thinking about it today, obviously, and I think it does in some areas. I think management and behind the scenes, it's quite good, but still it's hard to get women presenters. You know, we find it here at 2SER that we'll get lots of girls show up to training, getting them to progress to be presenters. They don't tend to put their hand up as much as the guys. The guys will come in and knock down our door and say, I'm here to be the next Hamish and Andy. You know, I'm here to be Kerry O'Brien.
Has someone actually said that?
Yeah, so many times. But you don't often get someone coming in saying, hi, I'm Lee Sales or Kathy Novak, I'm the next one, you know. So I think that's something that I have noticed. And, you know, we do our best to encourage it. We really believe that it's important to have diversity, not only of gender, but ethnicities, socioeconomic backgrounds, people from all walks of life. But it's still not ideal. You know, the community sector isn't perfect by any means.
Joanne, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Well, my next question is for you, actually. In the time that you've been working in newspapers, what have you seen change in terms of gender equality and more women making it to the top?
Well, I've been a journalist for 34 years now, and I suppose what is print is consistent with other sections of the media, as in I think the percentage of women at the upper levels is still not as it should be. But I think what has changed is that there are more women now, I suppose, who are my vintage, and I'm 54, and we're in positions now where we're senior. And one of the things that I think maybe is lost a little bit in if we focus on just the executive level of media is that media is about voice and it's about, you know, communication. And you only have to look, I suppose, at what I've been involved with for the last few years, which is child sexual abuse. Now, that's an area that was, you know, in the shadows for an awful long time while the abuse was occurring, you know, historic child sexual abuse. And But now it's out there. Now I can't say that I actually chose to do it, but I maintained an interest in it and kept writing about it. And I think it's maybe and I find that interesting as a female journalist. It's the selection of stories that are going to be pursued, and I think we're seeing in issues like child sexual abuse, domestic violence, issues that really are of core interest or should be of core interest to everybody. But I think as a woman journalist, you sort of take it on a little bit as a responsibility to write about it. So I think just over 30-something years, it's maybe that I've noticed more than anything, just that there's a lot of female journalists of a certain vintage who are selecting issues that maybe in the past have not been seen as priorities.
What do our other panellists feel about that? Melanie?
Yeah, I'd just like to agree with Joanne on that. I know that that's a battle that I faced when I was making content, was sometimes trying to explain an issue which you'd feel is an issue that affects everyone and being told it's a woman's issue. And then at the same time being told, well, women are the bulk of our audience. So if women are listening to this program and women are our talkback callers, but obviously not our hosts, but, you know, why can't we do a story that's relevant to them, which is about something that might be child sexual abuse or stillbirth or something to do in relation to women's health or domestic violence or, you know, anything that is a issue that affects us all but is just called a women's issue. And I found that very frustrating. So it is really good to see that now that I think is being more recognised and those stories are getting out there.
And Kate Blanchett made reference to that in her Oscar acceptance speech
about
as well.
Women's yeah. films.
Exactly,
so
that it's not a niche thing, that it should be of interest to everyone.
Exactly, and it's quite frustrating when you think, you know, women are 50 or 51% of the population and we're still considered to be a niche or a minority. And it's like, well, it's not the same.
On SBS, we had a
program just recently on the Insight Forum program on domestic violence. And what was interesting about that one is often if you're talking about domestic violence specifically as a journalist, the first thing that you want to think of is I need to speak to a victim and hear their perspective, which obviously is true. But what Insight did was focus a lot on the men and what it is that makes them violent against their partners, any sort of their history, the cultural influences, etc. And that was an interesting spin and took what would have been seen as a women's issue, as we've been discussing, and broadened it and really made it about the men as well and made it relevant to everyone.
I do want to ask about the sources that journalists choose to speak to in their stories in just a second. But first, I have another question for you, Joanne. Working in regional media, we don't often have people who work in regional media on Fourth Estate, so I really would like to get your perspective on if it's different for women working in regional newsrooms and radio stations compared to the major cities in Australia.
I think it must be, and I can only speak from the perspective of regional media simply because I've chosen not to work in metropolitan media because I enjoy the freedom that regional media affords. I would not have been able to do the work that I did on child sexual abuse. And it started in 2006 and it sort of developed and grew. And I was writing news pieces, longer articles, opinion pieces increasingly. And, you know, hundreds in the end of articles. Now, there is no way in the world that that would have been possible in a metropolitan media, particularly print. And so, and I think also regional media, it allows, I think, female voices more than in metro, or that would be my perception of it, because Metro, I think, is so competitive. At a regional level, there's not the pressures and the particular form of competition, I think, to get your voice heard as there is in the Metro. So I would say that. And I think that's important for journalists to be aware of as well.
Okay, there was some research done last year on women in media and particularly the actual sources that journalists are speaking to when they're doing news gathering and reporting. And it was found that there's a lot more men who are getting interviewed than women. This was pronounced in newspapers, but not just newspapers. Is that something that you're aware of when you're working on stories, or do you think it should be something that we are all talking about? I'll ask you first, Joanne, but I'll ask the others in a second.
It is something that I'm aware of, and it's something that I actively try to work against. And I think sometimes in the media we can, it is interesting. You'll see the same old names when a topic comes up. You can almost sort of predict who's going to be speaking on it. And again, I think because I'm a regional journalist, and it's I actively seek out different voices, and I can't say that I particularly look for female voices, but what you find is when you go outside the usual suspects, what you find are a lot of women and female voices. So and I'm always happy to put them forward. So, yeah.
Our other panellists are nodding at the moment. Kathy, what do you think about this?
Oh, I agree. And I think it's especially true in television in terms of hearing the same old voices, because a lot of the times you're trying to turn things around for the evening news bulletin same day, following the leads of the newspapers who have set the agenda for that day, especially if it's a political story and everyone's sort of chasing each other to get the same grabs or whatever it is. And maybe we're guilty of not trying as hard to diversify if you're just needing to get someone to speak on the topic. But the trouble is, apart from the diversity that we're speaking about, that you then find news reports that say experts say this, and it's one person who has one opinion, and it's seen everywhere, and it's taken as fact, and that is what experts on the whole think. And as Joanna's saying, if you broaden that, then you may get a different opinion. And at SBS as well, we try to reflect society. It's actually in our charter to do so. So we also actively seek people from different cultural backgrounds, different parts of cities and towns as much as we can. And it's difficult sometimes if you're trying to do it on the same day, but I think it's something we should all strive to do.
Mel, what do you think?
Well, I just agree 100%. I mean, and it comes down to something that we very much teach here at 2SER is to find that balance of voices, you know, to think about your program as a whole, to think about the people that you're going to all the time and not to do that, and to make sure that you do that. And in saying that, though, when I used to produce morning radio, you'd have really tight turnarounds, again, as you were saying, Kathy, and often it was quite hard to get a woman to do an interview because they were juggling so many roles. So it sometimes the producer is trying, just the appropriate person to speak or someone who would be good on that topic just doesn't have the time to do it because they've got so much else going on.
Okay, you're listening to Fourth Estate. I'm Lucy Robson, joined today by Joanne McCarthy, Kathy Novak and Melanie Wisnall. We'll be back shortly. Stay with us.
Stories, ideas, music and women. 2SER 107.3.
The City of Sydney's grants program provides funding opportunities to not-for-profit groups to support cultural, environmental and community-building projects. Online applications are now open for the following programs: community matching grants, cultural grants, environmental grants and community service grants. For more information, Google City of Sydney Community Grants or call the grants team on 9265 9333. City of Sydney, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
Did you know that there are four different ways to listen to 2SER?
No.
That's right. You can find us at 107.3 on the old FM band.
One.
Or 2SER on your digital radio.
Two.
You can catch the 2SER stream by clicking on the Listen Now button at 2SER.com.
Three.
Or you can download the 2SER app onto your iPhone.
Four.
Now there's no excuse to miss even a minute of 2SER. Stories, ideas, music. Available now in four convenient formats. 2SER 107.3.
Yes, you are on 2SER, and this is Fourth Estate, and we're going to move on to something currently making news, namely the ongoing Corby family saga. Mercedes Corby has apologised to the Indonesian public for comments that she made during her interview with Channel 7 for the Sunday night program. In the interview, she said that the drugs that Chappelle was caught with could have been from Indonesia. Chappelle's newfound freedom is actually at stake here. Kathy Novak, do you think this interview should have gone to air at all?
Oh, I don't know. It's always an interesting one talking about this Corby saga and whether or not people really still care. You know, when I talk to people, they're sort of saying, "Oh, Chappelle Corby again, do we really need to hear more about this?" But there obviously, on the other hand, is a certain level of public interest. And then that's why, you know, particularly in this case, Channel 7 and Channel 9 were sort of battling over that interview. Should it have gone to air? I mean, I feel like the Corbys were aware of the parameters of Chappelle's parole and that it is up to them whether or not they give that interview. I guess the question then is it the responsibility of the people conducting the interview or the person giving it? It probably lies in both hands a little bit. But if you look at the numbers, I'm not sure exactly what they were, but I think I did read that viewers sort of switched off Sunday night when it came to that interview. So perhaps people aren't as interested as we think in hearing about the latest on Chappelle Corby.
Joanne McCarthy, what do you think that this shows about, Australian media, but also Australia's relationship with Indonesia?
Well, on these things, I think it's interesting to put it in reverse. And then that gives you some sense of what the other people might be thinking. Now, if this was in reverse and it was in Australia and we had a lot of Indonesian media suddenly sort of in a main area and we had a high-profile Indonesian person who's just been released and then that person had some kind of suspected arrangement with a media outlet. And, I mean, the whole box and dice what would Australians be doing? We wouldn't be very happy. We would feel, and so this is a media construct. And personally, I haven't seen 1 second of any of the Chappelle Corby stuff. I don't know anyone who has. I think this is all about a media battle, and really, yes. So I'm probably in that group of people who just shrugs their shoulders and really couldn't care less.
Melanie Withnell, where do you think the responsibility lies in a case like this?
It is a really tricky one. And as Kathy said before, with people who agree to do an interview like that, I mean, I think they do need to take a bit of responsibility for the consequences that it might have. You know, in saying that, if it was someone who wasn't as familiar with the media and with the media game, I guess you sort of have to ask the questions of, you know, what effect would your actions have? You know, how would you feel as the journalist or the producer if you did this interview and then, you know, Chappelle Corby ended up going back to jail? Would you feel responsible? And I think that's a question that everyone has to ask themselves. But I think, you know, I heard a really great comment from Angela Caterns, actually, who said, well, maybe she should have just walked out of jail and done a press conference and said thank you to the Indonesian government for giving her parole and thank you to the Australian people for supporting her, and then gone off and just gone and chilled out with her family and gone to the beach. You know, I think there's kind of a lot to be said for, you know, I'm quite against checkbook journalism personally, but I think there's a lot to be said just for getting the story out there and then, you know, walking away from it and getting on with your life, maybe, for the Corbys.
So would you have done the interview if you were on Channel 7?
I don't know, because I think that there was that media war and it gets competitive. And do you think, oh, I want to get it. I want to beat Channel 9 or I want to beat Channel 10 or whatever. But I don't know. Maybe.
What about you, Kathy?
I don't know either. I would have had to weigh up the same things that Mel is talking about. And it sort of was really anticlimactic because in the end we were expecting an interview with Chappelle and then it was her sister who we've heard from before. So I'd have to take that into account as well. You know, SBS doesn't get involved in this wrangling. So it's not something that's front of my mind, really, I have to say.
What about you, Joanne? If you were at Channel 7, what would you have done?
One, I wouldn't have been at Channel 7, but two, Angela Caterns did have it right. This was all about, you know, news as entertainment. It's not news, and it was about major networks competing. It was about other media watching those other, you know, media networks competing. And in the process of all of that, we've ended up disrespecting another country and another people. And Angela Caterns was right. The first thing that should have happened, and probably the most appropriate thing under the circumstances, was for Chappelle Corby just to make a dignified statement to the media, get everybody, you know, satisfied. And then quietly finish the sentence.
Okay, this is Fourth Estate. We're nearly out of time, but we'll be back in a second.
2SER is a grassroots, locally focused, volunteer-driven community radio station. We're truly independent and not-for-profit. We rely heavily on financial support from you, the listener, to continue to provide the stories, the ideas, and the music. Call 9514 9500 or go to 2ser.com now to show your support.
Stories, ideas, music, and women, 2SER 107.3.
This is Fourth Estate. Just quickly to the UK now, where the News of the World phone hacking trial is still happening at the Old Bailey. The former News of the World editor Rebecca Brooks is being cross-examined in these last few days. She said that she didn't investigate phone hacking when she became a News International chief executive, but she does deny a cover-up. I'm wondering what this whole story has revealed about the way tabloids operate. Joanne, I know you don't work at a tabloid, but do you have thoughts about this?
Well, it is a tabloid format, so strictly speaking. I think we should say tabloid in the UK, which is a very distinct beast and ultra competitive. and you know, the stakes are very high, and so that is a different thing to hear in Australia, thankfully. What it says about the way that tabloid operates in the UK, well, I mean, you only have to look at the reports coming out of that trial, and we do have to remember that there is a trial going on, so we shouldn't be too liberal with commentary, but it's not a good look, is it? It's leaving aside the criminal aspects of it, it's just been a very seedy sort of display, and it doesn't do journalism any good at all. So it's but it's not, certainly it's not the way we operate, and one, we don't have that kind of money, but but two, what that's all about is ultra competition. There's nothing in the way of public interest in that, and so, and public interest as in for the broader good, that's just all about the commercial, the way things commercially operate in a very heated competitive market.
Kathy, do you think that we should be paying attention to this trial in Australia?
Oh, we should absolutely be paying attention, and I agree with Joanne. Journalists need to have good sources and be breaking stories, and it is competitive, and you need to be researching, speaking to people, and competing with other people who are doing the same. But it just seems that in this case, it's gone to another level and doesn't do anyone any favours.
Mel, you don't work in tabloid newspapers or radio, but what do you think that we can learn from this whole story?
I think it's a reminder to everyone to act ethically when you are doing stories. I think we as journalists, or, you know, people working in the media, we need to always ask ourselves, you know, does this have an effect? I mean, there's been a few other instances where I'm thinking, for example, of the Hot 30 countdown, the phone call to the hospital. I mean, who would have thought that what happened there was going to happen? But it's just that reminder to all of us to act ethically. And if you're making that content, or even for us as people who buy or read that content, I will admit I do read the celebrity gossip pages. Where is that information coming from? You know, I think we all have a part to play in it, and to think about the ethics around what we do and what we consume and that kind of thing.
I think one point I wouldn't like to make, and I forgot before, I think one thing we can see from the UK experience and is that when you have media, when you have journalists and media executives who are so close to, say, politicians and to other powerful people, in this case, you know, the allegations in relation to police being influenced, then you have a real problem, because you obviously, the public isn't aware of those kind of associations, and what we have here is allegations of money being used to influence people in terms of providing information, and that is a whole different ballgame. And I think as journalists, I said once to a politician who was having a go at me about something, and I said to him, look, I'm a journalist, I'm not your friend. And I think journalists have to keep that in mind. You can't be a friend of somebody and still maintain, there's a conflict there. And I think that's one of the most striking things that I've sort of seen just watching and reading some of this stuff, that way too close associations between media executives and other powerful people.
That's all we have time for today on Fourth Estate. A big thank you to our panel, Kathy Novak from SBS, Joanne McCarthy from the Newcastle Herald, and Melanie Withnell from 2SER. I'm Lucy Robson, and if you'd like to listen to this episode and past episodes, then head to fourthestate.org.au. Fourth Estate is produced at the 2SER studios in Sydney and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. Have a great evening.